This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And in times like these, we all yearn for a leader who can clearly state what the stakes are, someone who can reach inside of us and switch something on, get us all on the same page, someone like a Winston Churchill.
Upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty. And so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
Winston Churchill had so many finest hours. He left the scene in 1965, dying after a remarkably full life of leading, boozing, bombast, and guiding Europe and the United States to defend itself from Hitler, to convince the world that Britain could not be taken, whether it had allies or not.
When I warned them that Britain would fight on alone, whatever they did, their generals told their prime minister, in 3 weeks, England will have her neck wrung like a chicken. Some chicken. Some neck.
Later this hour, we'll be speaking about a new biography of Sir Winston Churchill, a book that itself has its own story. But we wanted to get you thinking about a leader whose influence went far beyond his terms of office, someone who defined the 20th century. And in the end, much of the world we see today, from the maps of the Middle East to the alliance that holds Europe together, were in part his creation.
I have never promised anything about blood, tears, toil, and sweat.
Winston Churchill. Later this hour. But that's not the kind of rhetoric we hear these days. About the crisis facing us right now, you've heard it. Has it heard of you? This echoey abyss beyond which no economy can pass? The fiscal cliff? The chasm at the end of the latest road lawmakers must traverse together to avoid economic catastrophe? We've talked about this before, how Congress built this fiscal cliff deliberately to force them to make a deal because the consequences of the spending cuts, the automatic sequester, it's called, are too horrible to imagine.
My God.
You maniac!
Game over, man. It's game over.
Congress, these intelligent people on Capitol Hill, have essentially adopted a shame approach. If you don't deal with this stuff, we're going to kill the little puppy. Make a deal or the baby goes into the microwave. No one wants that. Well, of course, in Congress, the helpless little creatures under threat are not cute little bunnies and puppies and babies. They are you and me, actual citizens like you out there, with real questions about the cliffhangers. We are being held hostage here. And so we go now to Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Todd, welcome.
Hi, John.
You know, I do think that this is a kind of a hostage situation and that the people held hostage are American taxpayers, essentially, and that a lot of them around the United States have a lot of questions about if the cliff actually happens, if it comes to fruition, if they're the ones that are going to feel the pain. These are legitimate questions, yes?
Yeah, well, that's why we're here, so that we can try to untangle some of the difficulty of this gnarled fiscal cliff and all of its spending and tax considerations and try to give people a little clarity here.
Well, I begin with the time-honored question. What about Naomi?
Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm from Dedham, Massachusetts. I'm very worried about the people with whom I work. They have developmental disabilities. Most also have medical issues, and they survive on SSI for the most part. How will Medicaid recipients be affected?
So those are individuals getting entitlement programs that are in place right now. She's talking about people with developmental disabilities on SSI. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty in Medicaid, but there's some good news and some bad news. Here's the good news first. You've heard about the sequester, these automatic spending cuts that go into effect on January 1st if Congress can't get a deal. That's pretty scary. There's a lot of domestic spending cuts right away. Medicaid, however, exempt from that. So you don't have to worry about the sequester if you're worried about Medicaid. Congress took that out of the equation. Beyond January 1st, John, there are a lot of unanswered questions about Medicaid. First of all, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, that expands Medicaid in the states. But the Supreme Court ruled that states have the option if they want to expand it or not. So you have to check with your governor in your state to see if your state government is going to sign on to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act to make it available to more people. They don't have to do it, according to the Supreme Court. If they do it, they can get more federal money to expand it. Now, here's the rub in the fiscal cliff. There's a debate in Washington right now about whether Medicaid is going to be on the table. Republicans want spending cuts if they're going to agree to some tax increases, and they think that Medicaid is a major driver of costs. In fact, in the states, it is. So it's completely unclear right now how that might be affected, but Congress could agree to lower the amount of money they send to the states to pay for Medicaid, and that could affect people like you. But right now, it's totally undetermined.
So the cliff part doesn't really affect Medicaid because it's either exempt or Obamacare eligibility would actually expand coverage in some areas. But if they make a deal, they could go after Medicaid. That's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely correct.
All right. So from Oklahoma City.
This is Michael from Oklahoma City. And my question is, if a compromise isn't agreed upon and we do go off this fiscal cliff, will I see a difference in my take-home pay right away in January? Or how does that affect my bottom line paycheck?
Yeah, and just about every American should have this concern, because if we do go over the so-called fiscal cliff or go past January 1st with no deal, everybody's tax rates go up. So what happens to your paycheck? In principle, you should get less take-home pay because your taxes are going to go up. But here's the weird thing about it. The Secretary of the Treasury, John, has the power to adjust the amount of withholding that the IRS or your employer withholds from your taxes. Why would he want to do that? We may pass January 1st with no deal, but the Secretary of the Treasury may know that, like, you know what, they're probably going to get a deal in the next month or two. We don't want withholding to be complicated where they keep more money, then you have to pay it back. If the Secretary of the Treasury does that and they get a deal that protects middle-class taxes, and I'm going to assume that maybe he's a middle-class taxpayer, then probably the answer on his income taxes unchanged. One thing that's going to go up, though, on January 1st, probably remember that payroll tax cut
right,
where they lowered it from 6.4%? That's probably going back up. The chances of Congress including a continuation of the payroll tax cut after January 1st is pretty low. It's not certain, but that's one part of your paycheck that you have to expect to go back up. But your income taxes probably unchanged, although also, I'm afraid, unclear.
All right. A lot of this is about how people's incomes and livelihoods are entwined with the fortunes of the federal government. Here's one of our Texas listeners.
This is Steve from Denton, Texas. What's that going to do to my federal student loans hanging over my head? That's the $64 million question. I'm a veteran who has the small GI Bill, or had, and that only covered most of my junior college time. This cliff is, to me, tied directly to the student loans issue.
Good question.
Yeah, and there are some consideration for student loans. If Congress gets no deal, the amount of exemption that you have for your student loan is going to go way down. Right now, you only get a tax deduction on your student loans if you make less than $60,000. If they pass the fiscal cliff with no deal on student loans, that $60,000 exemption drops down to $40,000. Which means if you're making $50 now and getting a tax deduction for paying interest on your student loans, you're not going to get it after January 1st if there's no deal. Also, the amount that you're allowed to deduct could go way down if there's no deal. But really, the important part is that exemption. If you make around $50,000 and you're able to write off interest on your student loans right now, you might be left in the lurch if there's no deal after January 1st.
No, it's complicated, but very, very much relevant. Here's a New Jersey listener who writes, give me three reasons, Todd, why going over the cliff will be good for the economy. Seriously, free markets adjust and we'll come out the other side. Why not just do it?
I'm afraid I can't really answer that question in any good way. It's hard to imagine why going over the fiscal cliff would be good for the economy. The Congressional Budget Office has made clear that it would be very, very bad. Now, here's one part of the question that is important, and it goes to this sort of idea of the fiscal cliff and that imagery of the fiscal cliff. We've talked about this before. If they go over the cliff on January 1st, you don't hit the bottom of the cliff on January 2nd. The economy doesn't tank the next day. It's really a bad name, the fiscal cliff. It doesn't really describe what happens. The Congressional Budget Office says if no deal is reached, GDP will go down a couple of 2-3%, and we could fall into another recession, but that's not right away. That's over the course of a year or two or three. As taxes go up, spending goes down, and the ripple effects of both of those things go through the economy.
So then the Michigan listener says, bring it right to you, what are the chances Congress will do nothing and just move the deadline?
Pretty low. Really pretty low.
Pretty low.
Yeah, the sequester is really the big thing that's preventing Congress from doing that. That's $1.2 billion of automatic spending cuts on January 1st if they do nothing. It's always possible Congress could do nothing and just move the date. They have the power to do it, but the idea of doing absolutely nothing is pretty low.
I'm going with my buddy Rich in Oregon here, whose question is, who coined the ridiculous phrase fiscal cliff anyway?
He's right, Rich. You're right that the term fiscal cliff is a little bit ridiculous because it doesn't really reflect what the situation really is. It's a term that really helps politicians.
Who did it?
Ben Bernanke.
You're kidding me.
Ben Bernanke's the guy in congressional testimony earlier this year who described the situation as a fiscal cliff. And of course, people in the media, those of us, took it and ran with it. The politicians love it because it's dramatic. It has a deadline and there's death at the bottom. But sorry, blame Ben Bernanke, Fed chairman.
I would have said Chris Matthews for sure. Todd Zwillick, thanks so much.
Pleasure, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.